Welcome to the Metro West Daily News Podcast. This is our second episode. I'm Megan Kelly, digital editor for the Metro West Daily News, and with me today is Zach Como from the Milford Daily News.
Hello.
And Bill Shaner from the Metro West Daily News.
Hello.
And today we're going to be discussing a case that is kind of more geared toward the Milford area, but it's been a case that captured nationwide attention a couple years ago. It is the so-called Blackstone House of Horrors.
Yes.
Where a woman in her 30s is accused of keeping a really filthy house. How many children does she have, Zach? Five?
Four?
Well, living ones.
Five living.
Five living, yes. And they found...
I'm sorry. Four living.
Four. So she had four living children, and they found the bodies of three
infants
in the house, along with the bodies of a lot of animals.
Yes.
And her boyfriend lived in the basement and claimed not to know about any of this. And there's some evidence that, right, the couple of babies might have been born alive, that they're not sure. So this case has been incredible. And, of course, we would like to stipulate that this woman that we're talking about, Erica Murray, and her boyfriend haven't been to court yet. They haven't been convicted of anything. They've just been there for various hearings. And, of course, they're innocent until proven guilty. So, Zach, why don't you give us a roundup of what happened and the latest developments?
Sure. So, in August 2014, cops got called to this house. A neighbor's kid was playing with one of the healthy kids that lived in the house. They couldn't get a baby to stop crying.
And these kids were older, right? They were school
age?
Yeah,
I believe 10 and 13.
Right.
They're healthy, you know, they're on the books, they're on the record.
And they were going to school, and
Yeah. Nobody
seemed to think anything was,
but that
going wrong.
Until this day, so the kid goes to get his mom to come help, you know, quote, get a baby to stop crying, end quote. So she walks in the house, immediately is, hit with an awful smell. She sees trash and, you know, dirty diapers piled up all over the house. So the cops come, they immediately take away, two older kids, but they find a 3-month-old and a 2-year-old, severely neglected. They later find out that they've never left the house, never saw a doctor. They're born in the house. The 3-year-old can't walk.
It was a 3-year-old. You said 2-year-old. 3-year-old?
I'm sorry. 2-year-old. Could not walk. They found maggots in your ears. Yeah, it's really, really awful. Just neglected, left on her back her entire life.
Was this the toddler or the baby?
The toddler. The baby, they had hope for because, you know, it was so young that,
right.
You know, think that it's gonna, you know, have a good life, but the older child has a lot of problems. No muscle tone. The list goes on and on. So about 2 weeks later, investigators go back to the house. They're trying to find documentation of these two younger kids because no one knows about them. To find out who they belong to.
They had no birth certificate, right? And
right.
There was no evidence
that they had
ever been born in a hospital or anything.
Right. So the search warrant listed kidnapping and human trafficking as crimes that they had probable cause for. At a hearing, the cop that actually wrote the search warrant testified that, you know, they really didn't know whose kids they were. Erica Murray claimed that they were hers. The dad and her boyfriend, Ray Rivera, claimed that he had no idea who these kids belonged to, a claim that he has been sticking to. So they go to search, and they eventually find, these three dead infants and, some dead animals. So she is eventually charged with two counts of murder and a couple other charges. And the boyfriend is only charged with child abuse, animal cruelty, as is Erica Murray, and possession of marijuana. They found some in the basement.
What's his name again?
Ramon Rivera.
Ramon Rivera.
Also goes by Raymond, but in the court documents, it's Ramon.
And if I recall correctly, they were renting this house. It wasn't. They didn't own it.
They. Well, it was Ramon Rivera's sister.
Right.
Owned it. I'm not sure if they were renting or if they just lived there.
I want to back up for a second because didn't they find one of the babies in a particularly gruesome way?
They were all very gruesome. What do you mean?
I remember one of them being found under a pile of diapers. Is that true?
They were, for the most part, all found in bags or backpacks in closets. I mean, in varying stages of, decomposition. And
yeah, the time the Blackstone, I remember the Blackstone police released a video and some photos of the interior of the house, and it got sent to me, and I couldn't even look at it, and I just handed off to another editor and said, I can't deal with this today.
Yeah,
I think one of the kids is the similar age to one of mine, so it was just, it was too much. I could not.
Yep.
It's really horrifying.
Yeah, it's a tough case to cover.
Yeah, I, for the majority of this case, I sat next to you in the Milford Daily News office, and I watched your sanity, I'll say, decline slowly, because yes. For probably a month and a half, you were doing very little but this case. I mean, other news agencies either had news trucks out there or print papers had three or four reporters, but we just had Zach on the case, and he pretty much chased it 8 hours a day for at least a couple weeks, and I could tell it was kind of getting to you. Maybe you could speak about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, how would it not get to you? It's a terrible thing to write about. Luckily now, it's only, you know, when they're in court once a month, so, you know, three or four times a month, I try to grab some court filings and whatnot. But yeah, for a while there, it was pretty tough to decompress after work.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
I imagine. Where are we now with the court proceeding? It's been a long time, right?
So it has been a very long time. It's been about 2 years, 2 years on the 12th. Since they announced that they found the dead babies. It's been pretty interesting of late. There is a motion to dismiss child abuse charges in Ramon Rivera's case. That is being heard on the 28th.
So, yes. But I also remember that one of the weird charges that I think the judge later dropped right was this charge of fetal death concealment
yes.
out of wedlock, which yes. is from the 17th century and has
correct.
Never been used.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, yeah. In the arguing to dismiss some charges about 6 months ago, Halpern actually wrote a lot about that and how it was, never used. It originated from, the 1700s where, these women who had, babies out of wedlock and hid them were, look down upon.
Killing them. I mean, it's so very specific, like an unmarried woman having a baby and then killing it. That's the charge. Not just like infant. What's the word?
Right. Having a baby out of wedlock back then was already looked down upon.
Right.
So hiding the fact that you did that,
right.
was even a worse crime.
Right. So it stands now that. Are they both in prison?
Yes. Murray's held without bail, and Rivera is held on $100,000.
Okay. And the thing that's been so mystifying to me is that there really haven't been a lot of concrete answers. I mean, it's really hard to say why this kind of thing would happen. And, I don't want to speculate about the mental health of Erica Murray, but it's just baffling how this went on for so long, and or how long did it go on for, and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Right. Went on for several years, according to investigators and forensic experts. Halpern's talked a lot about her mental health,
right?
And he's clearly looking for the insanity plea.
Is he disputing that she admits to any of this? Like, he's not saying.
Oh no! He fully acknowledges that she did this.
Yeah.
But,
do we know what happened with the children at all? I mean, I know DCF usually, the Department of Children and Families, doesn't usually release a lot of information, but do we know anything at all?
Like you said, they don't release any information. They are doing well. You know, every kid except for the older of the two that were found, they're all doing well except for that one too. You know, they have some worries about.
Yeah, well, it's surprising to me. It's the thing that I didn't actually learn until I had my own children was that the first year of life is, I mean, we all know it's important, right? But it's so important, and if you really mess it up to a huge degree, it can be lifelong damaging. You don't think that it does, but you think, oh, it's just a baby. Can't you just start from fresh? But so, yeah.
Right. Oh. What's always been so crazy to me is that the kids were in school. You know, they were in public schools, right? Blackstone.
Mm-hmm. Yep, Blackstone Millville.
Blackstone Millville. How do you get through public school every day, living in a house like that, and not have a guidance counselor, a social services worker, an administrator, a teacher?
If they were wearing clean clothes and their hair was brushed and they had something to eat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they weren't behavior problems, and they did their homework every night. I could see it, you know. And they don't talk to anybody about it. They don't, you know. I think a quiet kid who is well mannered and they don't have to look flash, right? They don't have to have the newest clothes, but they're clean.
Yep.
They're gonna slip through. Well, I don't know where those children are, but I hope they're somewhere nice and clean.
Yeah,
sure they are. Yes, the case has been interesting lately. There was a Supreme Court ruling allowing for a Franks hearing, which was for the Halpern, Erica's, the defendant, to hold a hearing to determine whether the officer lied in obtaining a search warrant. And so that was held. It was long. It was like 2.5 hours of Halpern's laying out a really elaborate argument. But
is
the judge,
the search warrant that was prompted after the children were removed.
Yes. So the judge ruled that, in quotes, the defendant isn't entitled to suppression of evidence. So,
okay.
And that just happened
last week,
right?
So this evidence is going to trial. So I think that was,
what's the evidence?
The three dead babies that they found during the search warrant.
Right.
So this seems to be going to trial, and seemed like a kind of a last-ditch effort to try to get his client a reduced sentence.
Are there any aspects of the case that are impounded?
Yes.
Meaning not available to the public?
Yes. A few motions are suppressed that I can't get. Names of the kids. They have been made public via one of Halpern's motions.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, obviously the location of the kids now.
Right. Okay. But none of the.
And you know the grand jury minutes.
Right.
And whatnot. Huh. And willing to bet a lot of this will be made public whenever the trial starts, and it's going to be pretty crazy.
So you anticipate this going to a full trial?
I think it would probably have to.
Yeah.
This is a really weird case for any one judge to decide, I think.
And then Murray and Rivera are going to have separate trials, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes, they're charged with that separately.
Are they married?
No.
They're not married.
No,
okay.
It's boyfriend and girlfriend.
Do you have any sense when the trial will start? Have you heard any whispering?
I asked Halpern this question probably a few months ago after the Franks hearing.
Yeah.
And he said very plainly, I have zero idea. Mm-hmm. So I think he has a lot more work to do.
Right. Seems like he's preparing a pretty big case.
Oh, yes.
Well, there's
a lot of
detail.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot we didn't even cover right now. But
yeah. Yeah, by comparison, Rivera's lawyer hasn't really done much in court. I mean, there is a hearing to dismiss some charges later this month, but most of those hearings have lasted less than a minute, just, you know, setting a new date. I get the sense that she's kind of waiting to see what facts are, what the judge rules on any motions in Murray's case to you know, kind of set the grounds for Rivera's case.
Right. Is anybody else covering the trial?
You know what? When really important things in the trial happen, yes, but it's pretty much been me and Lindsay from Mass Live, but she has since moved on to the Worcester DA's office. So
Lindsay is at the Worcester DA's office?
Yes, yeah. As of like last month.
This is Lindsay Corcoran, who correct. Used to write for Metro. Lindsay wrote for Milford.
Yes.
And then she moved to Mass Live.
Yep.
And so now she's with the Worcester DA's office. Oh,
so I'm not sure if the new Mass Live reporter will be. But,
interesting.
Oh, yeah, it's me. It's a me show.
It's going to be really, really. I might, if I have a day off, go sit in trial with you because this has been definitely the biggest or among the biggest stories that happened in our tenure at Milford Daily News.
Yeah, this was everywhere when it first happened. This was on CNN.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, it blew up.
Bill, I think I remember it was one of the first Saturday shifts that you did. You had to go to the house and see what was there. And
It actually
came down. It was Blackstone is a town that's kind of fringe for us. No one's really assigned to it. So we heard scanner reports the first day of hazmat at this house, and our editor then, Liz Banks, was like, "All right, which of you two wants to go?" And I was like, "Well, I got something. I'm busy." And Zach was like, "I need something." And he went over.
Yeah, a hazmat situation sounded great. Sounded exciting. And
2 months later,
stand around there all day, and then they announced what they found, and it was
It was horrible.
You were over there when they announced what they found.
Correct.
Did you have any idea the levity of it before they announced? Was there any whispering, or was it just kind of hit you like a sack of bricks?
So I was talking to a lot of neighbors. There was an older couple that lived across the street, a few houses down, who told me that they saw cops come, you know, a couple weeks ago, and that, you know, DCF took the kids away. So it sounded like it was something.
Something there.
Yeah, and then you know, I was just on my phone on Twitter the entire time I was there. And I saw some news agency, TV news reporting that they may have found a body, something about a body. And I just waited around, and you know, DA Joe Early made the announcement. Then I rushed to a Dunkin' Donuts to write my story.
Yeah.
And I called my editor, kind of freaking out.
Right.
But yeah, that was a little bit over a year in the job for me, and that's.
Yeah, when I was over at the house the next day or 2 days after, I was just looking at it, and you could kind of honestly smell it.
Yeah, that's
from the outside, and I felt like puking.
That's what a lot of people said.
Yeah,
when they walked by. It's now. I was there a few months ago. Just wanted to, you know, see what was going on there. Just an empty lot.
Yeah, it was torn down, right?
Yeah.
Like, pretty soon after.
Oh, yeah, I've driven by it. It's just weeds.
Yeah. Yeah, about a month after it was torn down, it's desolate now. It's just nothing there.
Yeah.
And Rivera, Christina Rivera, Ramon's sister, still owns the property. There's a lien against her for that money she owes the town for the cleanup and demolition.
How much is that for?
About 30 grand, I believe.
That must be such a scar on the town. They should...
Yeah.
Buy that property and put like a statue.
I believe they are trying to do that via like a tax taking.
Right. Yeah, I think that would be a good. I can't imagine. Blackstone's a very, very small town. Mm-hmm. It's on the Rhode Island border.
And it is, you know, less than 200 feet away from the police station.
Yeah. Yeah.
And town hall.
Well, there was definitely when I remember this, and I also just recalled it. I was looking yesterday for more information about it, and there was a lot of soul-searching in Blackstone, and, you know, I don't think that people should necessarily blame themselves, but it's hard not to question yourself when you think, this went on for so long, and how did this happen? How did none of us notice? And I remember people feeling the same way about that little girl, Bella Bond, and how did she slip through, and how did no one notice that she was missing?
Right. Yeah, that was when I talked to people, that was definitely what they said. Everyone kind of felt a little bit responsible for letting something like that slip through the cracks.
So one of our most read stories this past week was the about the Uri Stamps case in Framingham. And if you're not familiar with it, I will give you a quick refresher. Uri Stamps was a retired MBTA maintenance worker who lived in Framingham. And on January 5th, 2011, at his apartment on Fountain Street, a Framingham SWAT team raided the apartment looking for his stepson, Joseph Bushfan, who they thought was selling crack cocaine from the house. The cops had ordered everybody on the floor, and when Uri Stamps was lying face down, a police officer named Paul Duncan, his gun went off, and that ended up killing Uri Stamps. And it's been, like I said, this is in 2011, so it's been a pretty long back and forth case with the town and Stamps' family and that kind of thing. So the what happened recently, our colleague Jim Hadadeen wrote about this, was that the town has settled a lawsuit, and we don't know the terms of the lawsuit yet, but it's there. Saying that the case was ultimately dismissed, saying the parties have settled out of court. That's been kind of tied up, and this has been a pretty long, drawn-out case, and so it's been, it's kind of more of a resolution.
Yeah, it could be coming to a close. That's a sad thing. And
yeah, I mean, Uri Stamps himself was never accused of anything, and we should say here he was African-American, and, there was a civil rights component to it, perhaps.
For sure. It's especially in this summer, where there's been so many police shootings, just to think about even the notion of a gun going off, it's just sad.
Yeah.
I don't really know what more to say about it.
I think that the SWAT team raids, I mean, this has happened in a lot of other cases across the country, too, where the wrong apartment was raided or the person they were looking for wasn't actually there. So some family members ended up getting gassed or beaten or something like that.
Right.
And since then, the Framingham SWAT team has been disbanded.
So. Do you know when the Framingham SWAT team was disbanded? Was it in direct reaction?
I don't know.
Or did they have another reason?
I mean, that seems to be. It seems like there have been police departments around the state and the country that were disbanding those because not only were things like this happening, but also because they're very expensive.
Right.
They require a lot of specialized equipment.
Well, I know from other cases there's like a regional SWAT team now.
Yeah, there
is
one.
It's called Metro LEC.
Yeah, and the state police have one too.
Right.
Okay, so then I just had to look it up. So in 2013, October 2013, 2 weeks before he officially left, the outgoing chief, Stephen Carl, disbanded the SWAT team. Acting Chief Kenneth Ferguson said that Carl had disbanded it was that because he and Deputy Stephen Trask didn't have the training needed to lead the team.
Right.
Did this get any play nationally when it first happened?
I'm sorry?
Did this get any play nationally when
yes,
it first happened?
Yes, it did. It got a lot of play. It was pretty outrageous. And the DA's office at the time, the Middlesex District Attorney's Office, ruled it an accidental shooting. That's why the family filed suit, I think.
Wow. Yeah.
Is that it was ruled accidental, and the family filed like a civil rights complaint and against the town.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that's very common with police brutality style.
Right.
Criminal they don't get charged criminally, so the family sues for civil damages, and that's pretty standard.
And that's just money. It's not a jail sentence for
money.
Right.
It's money. So
So do you have any idea when we'll find out what the settlement was?
I don't know, but Jim is pretty dogged, and I'm sure he will get it when it's available.
Excellent. That'd be very interesting to see what they settled on.
Yeah. So then in kind of letter news, I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Super Troopers.
It was very favorite of mine.
It is cheesy, but it's very funny. Mm-hmm. And so they are shooting Super Troopers 2 right now, and some of the scenes they are shooting are being done in Hopkinton, little old Hopkinton. They turned a couple buildings into, it looks like it's supposed to be like a Canada, U.S.-Canada border crossing.
Yeah.
And our photographer, Ken McGaw, took some photos yesterday of the shooting, and I was looking at them this morning, looking at this one guy, thinking, is that really Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall? Like, is he in this movie? And it turns out it was Bruce McCullough from Kids in the Hall.
That's great.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny that Hopkinton got chosen for a U.S.-Canada border.
I know. I wonder.
Hopkinton. It's kind of Canadian.
Right. I mean, I wonder, that would be really interesting to talk to someone who is in charge of finding those, the locations, like the location director.
I'm sure they have, a guy that only does that.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I watched a lot of the extras with, the Lord of the Rings mm-hmm. movies, and they extensively talked about how they found, where to film various things. But
right.
I thought that was pretty funny. Hopkinton is kind of random, but maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's desolate enough or it has the right look.
It just has that Canadian vibe.
Yeah. It has the Canadian vibe, yeah.
There's a strange amount of movies that are filmed in the Metro West area.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. There was one at Hopedale a couple of years ago with Bruce Willis in it.
Surrogates, yeah.
Yeah, they used the abandoned Draper Mill.
But it was mostly CGI around the mill.
Yeah.
I saw the one shot it was in. I was like, oh, there it is, and all those buildings don't exist.
You're right. And it was just like a helicopter fly through. And we're like, oh, man, we were so excited. Yep. And it didn't end up being much.
Yeah, there have been other ones, though. American Hustlers or something was filmed.
Really?
I think so. It was some 70s thing. Or maybe it was that movie Joy with, what's her name? Oh, my God. Jennifer Lawrence. Jennifer Lawrence. And I know that Ted 2 was filmed around here.
I wonder, that would be an interesting bigger human interest piece to do.
John put up some photos and just a quick thing about all the movies that have been filmed in the area.
Oh, really?
Recently. Yeah, because we had photos of so many of them.
Yeah, I'll put that in the show notes. I think the people would be curious to see that.
And then, another story that made a lot of waves this week was the follow-up to this explosion in Franklin that happened about a year ago, where this new condo exploded and it killed the two people who lived there. So Zach's going to update us on that.
Yeah, so we just found out yesterday that there was a propane leak that led to the explosion, but they still don't know where it came from. All they know it was propane. So still a lot of questions left unanswered.
They don't know where the propane came from? Was there propane in the house or a gas line?
Yeah, I'm assuming, yeah, but they don't know, what the source was.
Huh. Interesting. And was that... what's the story behind that explosion? What happened? What ended up happening?
It killed an elderly couple. I believe they were in their 60s. Like you said, it was a brand new development.
Right.
There were some questions about whether there were occupancy permits, but the story that reporter Mike Leeson wrote indicated that there were, that, everything was, done by the book and, in fact, legal for everyone to, go get set up and move in.
Yeah, it was a new condo development, right?
Correct.
Huh. Wow. That is unfortunate. Another thing unfortunate that happened in the Milford area not too long ago was a truck hit a pedestrian. And
Sarge?
Yes. Sarge.
Yeah.
Sarge.
That was really sad.
We need to talk about Sarge a little
bit. Yeah, we need to.
Yeah, so the truck hit a pedestrian, and it was a fatal collision, and it ended up being this woman named Barbara Clement, She was an older woman, and she was very, very proud to be the first woman ever elected constable in Milford in 2010. And she was just sort of a character around town hall.
Went by Sarge, obviously.
Went by Sarge. She was very forceful. in speaking with people in a way that I found endearing. I remember I was covering a candidates forum she was at, and she went right up to me and said, why is my name not in the paper? I'm running for constable. And I was like, yeah, you know, there's a lot of people running for uncontested elections that we don't really put in the paper. And she's like, well, I'm the first woman constable. I was like, you know what, Sarge? Okay. And then I put her name in the article.
She definitely sounded like quite a character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I never had the pleasure of meeting her, but I talked to so many people, you know, after the fact, and everyone says she was great. Like you said, a bit loud and brash, but, you know, very warm at the same time.
Sounded like she really, the nickname was there for a good reason.
Oh, yeah. Well, and she was also a sergeant in the National Guard.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
right. Which is, yeah.
She was pretty tried and true old Milford.
For anyone interested, her wake is actually today and her funeral is tomorrow. Oh. I'll be covering your funeral.
I'm sure they'll be well attended.
Oh, yes. It will be.
What about the truck driver?
Well, the investigation is still ongoing.
So what happened was that she was about to cross the street or crossing the street, and right. She got hit by a tractor trailer.
Police Chief Tom Laughlin told me that he was watching the video, and the truck was stopped in front of the bank where she was walking out of. She started to walk, and then the truck started moving simultaneously. And the driver kept driving, potentially unaware that anything even happened because he was driving such a big truck.
Right.
You know, he found out, you know, miles away.
Yeah, his friend saw it on the news. It was all over the news.
Right. The picture of the truck was, right.
And he turned himself in.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, the DA's office says an investigation is still ongoing, so if he's charged, we'll know. Mm-hmm. If not, I suspect that we'll know as well.
Right. Do you know what part of the truck she was hit by?
To be honest, no. Yeah. I'm assuming somewhere near the front wheel.
Right.
Perhaps the...
Now is our segment that we call Around the Carrig, where we discuss what we've been reading or watching or listening to, that kind of thing. The kind of topic that you would talk about with your coworkers while you're waiting in line to get your coffee. So I'll go first. My Around the Carrig topic this week is I recently saw this movie called Pride and Prejudice and Zombies, which is, it was a book, and it's obviously based on the original Jane Austen novel, Pride and Prejudice. But the movie, I haven't read the book, but the movie was very, very funny. It's a little over the top. It's kind of campy, but I think that that's to be expected with a zombie movie. It's basically the telling of Pride and Prejudice, except what would have happened if zombies had invaded and taken over England in the late 18th century or early 18th century. So what I really liked was the very first line of the movie and the book, which is, "It is a truth universally acknowledged that a zombie in possession of brains must be in want of more brains." And the movie was especially great because it shows the Bennett sisters all dressed up in the way that you would expect them to be, but then it turns out that they know deadly hand-to-hand combat, and they're all wearing like knives and stuff on
brass knuckles.
And they have like their long gowns are actually kind of two pieces of fabric that they can pull apart, and you can see that they've strapped knives and stuff to their legs, and so it was pretty. Great. It was very entertaining.
So are they having, like, a very genteel talk over tea? And yes. Then a zombie will break through the window and yes. throw a knife?
And the funniest thing is that in the movie they talk about how there's this divide between do you train with the combat style of the Japanese, like more of a samurai thing, or do you train with the Chinese in more of a, you know, martial arts kind of thing? Right. And so the good people obviously trained with the Japanese. I don't know why, obviously, but they trained the Japanese. So, but they looked at, there's this really funny scene where there's like the bunch of women all kind of eyeing each other, and they're giving each other grief about where what combat they know versus what the other ladies know. So it was pretty funny.
When did that come out, and where can we watch it?
I watched it on the airplane coming back from Greece, but I believe I can check to see if you can stream it. But it came out pretty recently, maybe the last year or two. Let me see.
Might be next Netflixable.
Yep, I will check on that.
Excellent. Yeah, I remember my friend having the book. I was like, "Huh, that's awesome."
Yeah,
I'd much rather watch the movie, though. I think
it seems like one of those things where you look at the book and you kind of chuckle and you think, "Oh, that's funny," but then you don't actually read it or buy the book.
But you immediately think, "Oh, that'd be a great movie."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Right.
That was probably their goal in writing it. Yeah. They're like, "All right, we're going for the option."
Yeah. Right. So the movie came out in February of this year.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
And
straight to DVD, apparently. I watched it on the plane.
Yeah, the Wikipedia article says that it grossed just $16 million worldwide, making it a box office bomb.
Ouch.
But maybe it will have a, a cult following.
Yeah, I'm going to watch it.
So you can get it on DVD, and let me check Netflix to see if you can stream it. You probably can, or you can get it on Amazon or something. Yeah, it's pretty violent, and it's definitely... I wouldn't say explicit, but it's gory. You know, like you see people kind of turn and their face is basically destroyed because now they're a zombie.
That's awesome.
So you can stream it on Amazon Prime and you can buy the DVD. So, or you could take a plane back from Greece. Your choice.
Very good. All right. I've been binge watching this week. It's a 10 episode miniseries on HBO. It's called The Night Of, and it was released maybe a month or two ago. It follows a college-aged Pakistani kid living in Queens through a murder trial. He's accused of murdering this girl that he went on a weird date with, it follows him going through the trial and through Rikers because he's held without bail. And the best character of the show is John Tenaro. He was Jesus in The Big Lebowski, and he plays like a world weary defense attorney who is representing this Pakistani kid, and he's so good at it. He has this thing where he's sitting in the cell, in the holding cell, right after the prosecution, and he's like, don't trust the detective at all. He's a talented oppressor.
Mm.
He's a subtle brute. And it has like that kind of weird literary thing that goes through it. Oh, it's so good. I watched, it's about 10 hours, and I watched it in 2 days. So, check it out. It's great.
I liked what you said earlier, would you say it was a mix between The Wire and Serial and Oz?
It actually has a bunch of characters from The Wire. Omar from The Wire is in it, and so is...
Well, actors, so though, it's not the same universe.
Brody. Yeah, the actors, yeah. It's not the same universe. It takes place in New York instead of Baltimore. But it's very much the same sort of gritty depiction of urban life on the East Coast, and it also the way that the question is left open as to whether or not he did it is very close to Serial.
Yeah.
In fact, I think if I read an interview with the writer, he'd say, "Yeah, I listened to Serial and then wrote this to sort of use fiction to get further into this kind of question."
And this is on HBO.
It's on HBO. Yeah.
It's not based on a true story, is it?
No, it's completely, it's fiction, but it's very good. And the depiction of the judicial system and what it does to people that get involved with it is also very good, a really strong social critique. So, check it out, it was great.
So a lot of courtroom action?
So much courtroom action. It goes through the whole trial, and goes through his time in Rikers while he's waiting for his trial.
For the most part, TV shows do a pretty good job at depicting what actually happens in a courtroom. Another news, first place. Red Sox in first place.
Red Sox are in first place as of last night.
Yep. Baseball is exciting to watch again, and it's fun.
It's going to be a good, what are there, 3 weeks left, a month left?
About a month.
Yeah, before the playoffs. I think the Red Sox are going to be in the playoffs. They have a really exciting lineup and a really nerve-wracking rotation. Mm-hmm. And they're just a lot of fun to watch this year.
So guys were you guys teenagers, young teens in 2004 when they won?
I was 14.
You were 14?
Yeah, I think I was 13 or 14.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was, it felt like almost fiction.
Yeah. That was a highlight of my sports life.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
My sports watching life.
Yeah.
I was
2004.
In game four of the ALCS against the Yankees, they were down 3-0. So my mom and I were just, bummed out at home. And she's like, oh, let's get tickets, whatever. So we went. The game four, the first game they won, it was the most memorable game.
That is so awesome.
I've told you this before, yeah.
Wow.
That's so sick.
I mean, the place was full of Yankees fans. Yeah. They're going to win, you know. They only had to win one game, and they were, you know, a couple outs away from winning. And, yeah, it was awesome. Oh, so they were cheap seats. Paid $40 to sit in the grandstand.
That's amazing.
Yep.
Well, when they won in 2004, I was 24.
Mm.
At the time, I was in a terrible bar in Alston when they won, and
as our most 24-year-old.
Indeed. And I remember calling my mom on my flip phone.
Oh,
yes, classy. And then we walked down to because they were away. They were in wherever they were playing.
Yeah, I don't remember.
St. Louis, maybe.
Yeah.
And so we walked down to Fenway with this large crowd and. It started getting really scary, and
that's where the cars got flipped and set on fire and stuff.
Yeah,
right?
And some kid shimmied up a light stand. Oh my god, I'm blanking.
That's okay.
Lamp post.
Yep.
Traffic light. It had a traffic light on it, like the kind that kind of hovers over the street, sticks out. And he just shimmied up that and started dangling from that, and I turned to my at the time boyfriend, now husband, and I was like, I think. Maybe we should go.
Yeah,
that were his thoughts.
This doesn't feel great.
Yeah,
so.
I think the riot squad came down shortly after you.
Yeah,
left.
I'm pretty sure they did. So, yeah, but that was a pretty memorable night.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, it's just fun to have watchable baseball on again.
Yeah, yeah. The middle of the season is usually a slog anyway, but for the Red Sox, it was particularly bad this year because they have so much talent, but they were underperforming. Mm-hmm. Now they're kind of hot.
Yep.
And,
especially after the last couple of years of last place finishes, it's fun.
Mediocre.
Something to watch.
Yes, it's very, very exciting. Very exciting.
Thanks for listening to the Metro West Daily News podcast. This podcast was put together by Megan Kelly and Bill Shaner and Zach Como. And our music was composed by the Milford band Born Without Bones. Please let us know what you liked and didn't like about this podcast. You can email us at metrowest@wickedlocal.com. I'm on Twitter as Megan B. Kelly, MeganBKelly. And we would love to hear from you. And we will put up all of the stories that we talked about on our website, metrowestdailynews.com, which you can find at any internet browser. Why can't I be the one in your slow motion? Why can't I play dumb when my castles of sand will wash into the sea? Are you yet to release all the possible? I found out I